The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to my friend and co-author of The Wah Wah Way, Howard Stokel. Stick around. He may be the retired CEO of Wawa, but trust me, he is still the wind beneath the wings of an awful lot of Canadian geese and their associates. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of Wawa customers and associates who went straight to the index of the Wawa Way to see if their stories made the cut in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. You either know what a Wawa is or you don't. So if you're watching today's show, I'm guessing you're a member of the cult of convenience store personality. Founded in the small town of Wawa, Pennsylvania, 50 years ago this month, a Wawa store is so much more than an oddly named neighborhood convenience store. It's a place where friends and neighbors meet, greet, and serve friends and neighbors. It's a place where you can always count on a friendly face and a delicious meal, a great price on fuel, and a chuckle every time you see that silly name, Wawa. Now, more than a year ago, I was hired by Wawa to help its then CEO and now vice chairman, Howard Stokel, write a cultural history of the company he spent the last quarter of a century with, a place where he was known as the Brand Ranger, among other well-appreciated nicknames. In co-authoring The Wawa Way, How a Funny Name and Six Core Values Revolutionized Convenience, I had the great pleasure of working with Howard and learning why he's such a beloved and revered character in the stores and halls of Wawa. And he is easily the humblest executive with whom I've ever worked. By the way, Wawa's profits from the Wawa Way will go to the new Wawa Foundation, and we'll talk about that. Howard Stokel, welcome to Mr. Media.
Bob, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Always a pleasure to see that face and to talk to you, Howard. Thanks for doing this. And most importantly, I mean, congratulations on publication of the Wawa Way. Although, you know, there were days, I have to admit, when I was afraid that modesty would prevent you from even putting your name on the book.
Well, it's been an exciting journey, and we've worked together for well over a year now. I've never written a book, learned a great deal from you, learned a great deal from the publishing industry, and it's a very good feeling to sit here today and see the book on the shelves, on our counter in the stores, on Amazon. And the reaction that our customers and our communities and our associates and business at large has had to the book.
It's a good reaction, right?
Oh, it's been very positive. And, you know, it's a wonderful story. You know, I've always considered myself a storyteller. And I joined the company in 1987 in human resources and worked my way up like most of the people do here at Wawa. But what I really enjoyed doing during my career, and I continue to do it in retirement at this stage, tell stories and nurture and manifest the wonderful culture that has existed in this business throughout decades, and I guess you could say throughout centuries.
What was your motivation for the book as a storyteller? What was your motivation for getting a book written as kind of your final act as CEO?
Well, you know, I thought a lot about it. And, you know, at my retirement, a year and a half ago, I announced publicly that I was going to write a book and it would be published for the 50th anniversary of the company. So you talk about pressure. You know, the book had to be done. I had no choice in the matter, and everyone expected it. But the motivation was, I'll never forget my first day of work after I graduated from college. It was June 1967, and I had a job at a legendary department store called John Wanamaker in Philadelphia. And John Wanamaker was like a Macy's. It was like a Marshall Field's. It was iconic here in Philadelphia. And John Wanamaker was a pioneer in the department store business. He was also Postmaster General of the United States. President Taft came to dedicate the John Wanamaker store. And it was like the Rock of Gibraltar. When I walked in that day in June of 1967, I thought John Wanamaker as a brand would be there forever. Well, unfortunately, it's been about a decade now, and no one's shopped John Wanamaker because they don't exist. They're not in business. And I had a lot of friends that worked down the street in Philadelphia, and there were great department stores like Strawbridge and Clothier, family-owned, Gimbel's, Litz, Snellingburg's. Not one of those retail entities exists today. So you can't take longevity and endurance for granted. And you have to understand, what are your underlying reasons for success? Because they're likely to be your underlying reasons for success in the future. You have to stay true to yourself, but yet you have to change with the times. And I thought our 50th anniversary was an opportunity to talk about our underlying reasons for success so that for generations of associates and customers and for the communities that we serve to understand what we're all about. Wawa is a privately held company, so there's not a lot published, you know, like a public company. We don't have quarterly reports or year-end reports that we publish at large. We publish it to our stakeholders and to our associates, but not broadly, as a public company would do. So people are always very curious about what makes Wawa, Wawa. But the most important motivation in this book was to talk about how did we get to where we are today? How did we reach our 50th? What are those underlying reasons for success? What are the things we have to preserve? And at the same time, what are the things we have to change? And boy, have we changed over the years, and we're a very different business today than we were when Graham Wood opened that first store in 1964. Jim Collins writes a book, How the Mighty Fall, and he talks in that great business book about the need to identify and preserve the underlying reasons for success. And that was the motivation for this book. Partly celebration, but more for generations of people to come.
Just in case anyone who is not in the cult yet is watching this interview, go ahead and explain what a Wawa is, or where the name came from, because I think we've got to cover that right from the beginning.
Well, George Wood, you know, was a businessman in New Jersey. He would vacation here in Pennsylvania, outside Philadelphia, and in Media, Pennsylvania, about 20-some miles outside Philadelphia, and he enjoyed the countryside. And he would stay at a hotel, but eventually he rented and bought a home here in Wawa, Pennsylvania, called Red Roof, because at one point it had a red roof. It was a nice country home. And, you know, he bought property up the street that had a dairy, and he ended up as a hobby in the dairy, but then going into the dairy business as a business. And up to that point, the family had been in the iron business, had been in the textile business. The family had made fire hydrants. If you go to New Orleans, you'll see the name R.D. Wood on the fire hydrants. As my predecessor, Dick Wood, said, more dogs have lifted their legs on his name, family name, than any other family name in mankind. And then the family went into textiles and actually made cloth baby diapers under the name Red Star. So fortunately, we're not in the fire hydrant business today. We're not in the cloth baby business today. But it evolved into the dairy business. And the dairy was in the town of Wawa and took on the name of the town. And then when, you know, Graham Wood decided to go from the dairy business to the convenience store business, because we were delivering dairy to customers' homes. And, you know, with supermarkets expanding and customers not wanting as much dairy delivered to their home, they were buying it at retail stores, is when, you know, he decided to open the first convenience store to basically sell dairy product. So the stores took on the name of the dairy. And, you know, Wawa is a place in Canada. Wawa is also named for Canada Goose, who migrated to this part of the country. So we didn't invent the funny name Wawa. A lot of people say, well, who was your marketing consultant? Well, we had no marketing consultant back in those days. The dairy took on the name of the town. We took on the name of the dairy. And it is a fun name. You know, it's a name that people remember. It's a one-of-a-kind name, and it's worked very, very well for us for over 100 years in the dairy business and now for over 50 years in the retail business.
And let's talk a little bit about what makes Wawa different from a 7-Eleven or a Circle K or any of the more regional competitors. I mean, I had this issue working with you guys. I had to take my daughter and my wife one at a time, and they were like, why would I want to go to a, you know, we're in Florida where Wawa is new and it has these enormous locations, and both of them said the same thing. Why do I want to go get food at a gas station? I'm like, no, it's not a gas. Well, then why do I want to get at a convenience store? Let's go to a restaurant. No, let's go in. You have to kind of experience it. Yeah. But what makes it, from your perspective, different? What sets it apart?
Well, clearly our people. And the Harvard Business Review did an article about 5 or 6 years ago. And they talked about when you go to Nordstrom's, you expect great service. When you go to a high-end department store, you expect good personalized service. But there are retailers out there, and we were one of several that they named. Quick Trip out of Tulsa was another, where the convenience store business is not the most glamorous business. It's a low transaction business in terms of the amount the customers spend each time, although they come back, you know, frequently. But there are some retailers in the convenience store industry that do a great job of customer service and make it special. And they named us as one of those retailers. And they said Wawa is a living brand because of their people, the people that work in the stores, that believe in the brand, that want to serve their communities and want to serve their customers. It's what I call the Cheers a convenience store effect, a place where you're known by name, a place where you have a familiar experience, a place where you have a safe experience, a place that you call home, a place that you meet with friends. You know, it's been talked about at Wawa that people are so courteous that everyone holds the door open for you. And that's true. I mean, I don't think I ever have to open a door at Wawa in the morning, partly because we're so busy, but people feel so good when they come into Wawa. That's what makes us so unique. Now, you look at other convenience store models. They're franchised. We control, everyone works for us, every single associate. In some cases, we own the real estate. In other cases, we lease the real estate. But we don't franchise. We don't license. And we also stay localized. I mean, we're in 5 mid-Atlantic states, and now we're in Florida. We haven't spread ourselves too thin. We cluster our stores closely together so that we're convenient, you know, for our customers. And we actually appear bigger than we are. And we compete with some of the biggest companies, you know, in the world today. But what makes Wawa Wawa clearly are the people. You know, major petroleum companies benchmarked us, tried to copy what we did. And they struggled. You know, they had the money to do it. They had the executive know-how to do it. But if you don't create a culture that can serve your communities and your customers, you just can't deliver that Wawa experience. So it's that Wawa unique experience that I tried to capture, and together we tried to capture in the book. That really separates us from everyone else. There are a lot of great convenience stores out there, but they have different ownership models than what we do, and they have a different culture. You know, here it's all about culture. Our big competitive advantage is our culture. And the companies that you mentioned, and there's so many other convenience stores out there, all have somewhat different cultures.
Now, I know that you're not big on getting or taking credit for things, but you now have the book that speaks for what you wanted to accomplish. But tell people what they should know about your two predecessors, Graham Wood, who started the company, and his younger cousin, Dick Wood, who followed him and preceded you as CEO. What should people come away from the book or come away from the company knowing about these two guys and why they were so important to this culture of Wawa?
Well, Graham Wood was running the dairy and knew that the dairy long-term on its own could not grow shareholder value. And he was concerned about, you know, the jobs of the people in the dairy. And he had seen people in the textile mills and the iron mills lose their jobs as those businesses closed. And he did not want these people to lose their jobs. He wanted to maintain the tradition and the vitality of that dairy. And that's why he decided after looking at, you know, the marketplace, after visiting some other convenience stores, that he wanted to go into the convenience store business. I don't think he ever imagined it would be as successful and as big as it is today. He wanted an outlet for the dairy products that were manufactured in Wawa, Pennsylvania. He was an entrepreneur. Graham was willing to take risks. He was willing to try different things. And if they didn't work, fine. You know, he'd move on and try other things. He was a very down-to-earth person. You know, he would travel to the stores. He would get to know associates. He would know about their bowling game and their family. And that's still very much alive today. Leaders of this business get to know, you know, frontline associates. One of the most powerful stories, I got several to share with you right now, if you don't mind, sure. Bob, was that, you know, there were softball games here on the campus of Red Roof. And there was one person who was a store manager who was not playing softball because she was a single parent and had her two kids with her. And Graham said, well, how come you're not playing? She said, well, I have to babysit my kids. Graham said, I'll take care of your kids. You get out there and play softball, and I'll babysit. Well, not only did he babysit that night, but he babysat every single week. His wife came with him to babysit. And that's what I call servant leadership, you know, an upside-down organization, recognizing who's really important in the organization. When Graham was very ill and before he passed away, he wanted to visit stores and thank people for what they had done for Wawa, even though he was in the back seat of a van and really couldn't walk. And one of his last trips from the hospital to go home for the final time, he actually asked the ambulance driver to stop by a store so he could look at the progress of the store. Again, servant leadership, putting the business first, putting people first. A very humble person, a person who had a great entrepreneurial spirit. His legacy is alive and well today. When we opened the first store in Florida outside SeaWorld, I was on the speaker's platform, and I looked out into the audience, and I saw the Wood family. And I said to myself, what would Graham say if he were here today? And I asked Fred, his son, that very question. He said he would love it, you know, because he was a risk taker. He was entrepreneurial. He liked to try different things. He liked people. His spirit was alive and well on that day when we opened the SeaWorld store. So he planted the seeds. But then Dick Wood, his cousin, took those seeds for almost 40 years at the helm of this company and deeply implanted those seeds, let those seeds nurture and manifest, and grew this business tremendously. You know, Dick understood Graham. He understood, you know, Graham's philosophies of the business. But as a company grows, you can lose your way. Dick made certain we didn't lose our way. And he created the structure, he put the culture in place that Graham started, and solidified the business to a point where it has grown significantly and exceeded the expectations that I think Graham ever had for the business, the family ever had for the business, or those associates early on. You know, when I became CEO in 2005, I was the first non-family member to ever be CEO of this company. And the company deserves tremendous credit because so many family businesses want family people to run the business. And we run this very much like a public company, even though we're a family-controlled business. And that speaks volumes for the leadership philosophy of this organization because we're not here just to create opportunities for family members to work here. We're here to create opportunities for everyone. And we truly do run this as a public company, but yet we're a private company and we have all the attributes of a private company. So we've only had four CEOs in the history of this company over 50 years. Chris Geissens took my place. And when we look for someone to be CEO of this company like Graham and Dick, we look for servant leaders. And I wrote this book because I really wanted to capture what servant leadership was all about. I wanted to talk about Graham's commitment to people in the community and Dick's commitment to people and community and how they served a higher calling, how they gave back, and how they've really championed the interests of the people in this company that make this company so unique. I never met Graham. I joined this company after Graham passed away. But I can tell you, I feel like I know Graham very well. I work for Dick throughout my career here. And Dick is truly an outstanding leader. He's compassionate. He's empathetic. He listens. He wants people treated fairly. He takes a long-term point of view. And he was a wonderful CEO, and we're very fortunate today that he continues as chairman of the board.
I want to give you a chance to tell another story. Tell folks the story about Dick Wood and then Governor Rendell.
Rendell.
And when he called over, he thought he was calling to the store or calling a secretary.
Well, this is classic of the culture here. It's very hands-on. You know, we don't have a lot of staff. There are no executive perks like parking places or cafeterias here or anything of that nature. So Governor Rendell, he was governor, and he was before that he was mayor. He was mayor at the time, was new as mayor of Philadelphia, was holding an evening meeting and wanted to feed his people. And he said to himself, oh, how can I get some food in? I guess my secretary's gone home. There's no one here. So I'm going to call Wawa, and I'll call Dick Wood's secretary and see if they can help us out, feed these people here in this what's going to be a long meeting tonight. So, you know, they call Dick Wood's office, the mayor at the time, Mayor Rendell, and Dick picks up his own phone. Not unusual. We all basically pick up our own phone. And Mayor Rendell says, I'd like to order some hoagies. Dick, can you send me to the right people? Dick says to the mayor, I'll take your order. And the mayor wanted these big six-foot hoagies, but, you know, you have to order them in advance. But Dick said, well, I can get you some two-foot hoagies, but that suffice. The mayor said, fine, I'll take hoagies. Dick took his order, called the stores, and made certain that the mayor was able to feed his guests dinner that night. And that's symbolic of this company. Service, you know, hands-on, doing things that every single associate does to make this brand great. Mm-hmm. That story has lived on and on and on, and I'm glad Bob has made the book.
Oh, it's a great story, and of course it's his commitment to Wawa, Rendell's commitment to Wawa at the time that in a city known for its cheesesteaks, nonetheless got a Wawa Hoagie Day proclamation, and yeah. You know.
Well, that was a challenge because, you know, the cheesesteak is revered here. Philadelphia has great food, soft press cheesesteaks and hoagies. And obviously,
soft pretzels. Mm.
If you're a politician, you don't want to offend your voters.
Right.
And a lot of people who love cheesesteaks, me too, included here in Philadelphia. But, you know, the cheesesteak had its day and the hoagie had its day. And we did start under the mayor's leadership, Hoagie Day, which has always been a fun event each and every year. Where we, you know, build a big hoagie, celebrate the hoagie. More importantly, we're celebrating traditions of Wawa, and more importantly, the traditions that exist here in Philadelphia. Hmm.
Now, Howard, not every decision made at Wawa over the years has been a good one. And what I really enjoyed about getting to know you is that you're not shy about sharing the failures. So I'm going to ask you about one, maybe two. There was the ill-fated decision to co-brand Wawa stores at a certain point with Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and even Dunkin' Donuts. Now, what could possibly go wrong in doing that?
Well, this goes back in the early 1990s and goes back to the dark days. And the book talks about successes, but you learn from disappointments. You learn from failures. And it makes you humble. And as Dick Wood has always said, it's good to be paranoid. Always worry about what could go wrong. So we were in the midst of the dark days in the late 80s, early 90s, where customer count was going down, and our product offer and our marketing plan wasn't aligned with the marketplace at that point. And simply put, our prices were high, and customer behavior was changing. And we had grown up being more of a supermarket, a small supermarket, the alternative to the supermarket, but customers were now wanting meals and food on the go. So we were selling coffee, we were selling hoagies, but we probably undervalued our brand, and we felt we needed the brands of others to grow our business. And there was a trend at the time where other convenience stores were beginning to co-brand with Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Dunkin' Donuts, as I guess you could say, quick fixes to food service, because you not only buy their brands, but you buy their infrastructure and to a certain degree their know-how. So we decided to compete with our own brands. We bring in those brands. And we opened well over 100 Taco Bell kiosks in our stores, a couple dozen Pizza Hut kiosks. And we had Dunkin' Donuts and or Krispy Kreme in almost every single store. Now, when we did our customer research, customers said, "Ooh, I don't quite understand that. How are you going to put a Taco Bell in your store?" They were lukewarm about it. Our associates were less than lukewarm because they loved Wawa products more than they loved the products of their competitors. But nonetheless, we didn't quite listen. And a valuable lesson here, listen to your associates, listen to your customers, and we put in all these kiosks. Well, the vast majority didn't work. They just simply didn't work. And customers and our associates preferred our own brand. So even though for a couple years we spent a lot of time co-branding, it taught us a valuable lesson. Listen, number one. But number two, we had underestimated our own brand. Now, what this experience did with Pizza Hut and Taco Bell, it taught us to be better brand merchants. We elevated our game because if you have competitors' brands in your stores, you've got to do a better job of your own brands. So we took coffee and hot beverages and our cold foods to a whole new level. And once we removed Pizza Hut and Taco Bell from our stores, we launched a whole variety of hot food programs that continue to go strong today because we learned how to do it. Now, we replaced Dunkin' Donuts with our own bakery. And to this day, we have our own bakery run by J&J Snack Food Company in New Jersey. But all those products are our recipes and under the Wawa name. So that challenge, that mistake, led to a whole series of successes. And I have always talked about here at Wawa, you learn from mistakes. If you don't make mistakes, you're not trying hard enough. Now, the key is to face up to your mistakes. And if there's anything I would have done differently, is maybe faced up to those mistakes a little bit sooner than what we did at the time. But as I look back, they were major turning points in our history because we undervalued our brand. Co-branding taught us to be better brand merchants, and we've had a whole series of wins ever since we went through that. Now, we've had some disappointments along the way. You know, we've been testing pizza for 20 years and still haven't found the right pizza. 20 years ago, I went out to Seattle and studied the espresso and cappuccino and latte trend, and we tried it 20 years ago and had baristas in some of our stores. We were way ahead of the time, and about 15, 18 years later, we come back and it's succeeded and it's been a big success. So timing's everything. But if you don't make mistakes, you're not trying hard enough. And I've always said to people, push the envelope, see how far we can go. If it doesn't work, we'll retrench, we'll do something else, or we'll come back to it. You know, when you think about it, you know, we're very successful with gas, but this is our second time around with gasoline. You know, back in the 70s, we had gas in some of our stores, but there were only two or three gas pumps. It wasn't big and bold. And we got out of the gas business. But then within a decade, we came back into the gas business with a whole different model. And today we sell 1.7% of all the gas in the United States, and we have the big market share here. So once we've made a mistake, we're not intimidated, and we'll never do it again. We'll go back and say, what went wrong? What can we learn? Isn't something we want to revisit. And some of our greatest successes have been out of failure that we revisited. And that keeps the organization young. And if you're willing to experiment, and Graham Wood was a person who was always willing to experiment, and that legacy is still with us today.
Well, you mentioned coffee, and that's the other mistake I want to talk to you about. Tell folks the story about the smelly coffee cups. What on earth is that about?
Well, you know, it was not too long ago. It seemed like yesterday, but about 10 years ago, where we were rebranding a lot of our, you know, packaging and coffee cups and soda cups. Because I always talked about being the Trader Joe's of the convenience store industry, having more and more Wawa branded products. So at the time, we had a group of people who thought we should rebrand the coffee cup. And they came up with this whole new design, which is very different than what we had. Our coffee cup at the time was beige, very warm and fuzzy, very soft. And people thought we should go a different direction and came up with this new design. And it was completely black. is a black coffee cup. No one else had a black coffee cup in the marketplace at that point. So people thought, including myself, it would be different. So we discontinued the page.
I'm sorry, I'm already laughing. I don't want to give away the punchline.
Well, it's funny now. We rolled it out, and after about 5-6 weeks, we got a few complaints, and people said, there's an odor here. And we were beginning to investigate this so-called odor. And I would say it was not an appetizing odor. So as we were very quietly looking into, do we have a problem with the coffee cup, there's a morning sports show hosted by Angelo Cataldi, a very high-rated show.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah, in Philadelphia. He's certainly a Wawa fan. He shops our stores, would visit our store every morning, and he would come in with this big Wawa cup of coffee. Well, he has other people on the show with him, two other people that appear with him every morning from about 6 to 10 in the morning, and they kept saying, Angelo, something smells. Odor. And it's like body odor. And Angelo thought they were pointing the finger at him, and I guess in a way they were, because the odor was coming from his direction. And he swore it wasn't him, that he had taken a shower, and that he was not the problem. And he concluded that it was the coffee cup, that the coffee cup was putting off the aroma. So here we're on local news with this new coffee cup that doesn't smell well. Well, the fact was the coffee cup was putting off an aroma. The ink on the exterior of the cup, when it got extremely hot, created this aroma.
Odor. So I think coffee has an aroma. I think the cups had an odor.
Well, yeah, you're right. This was an odor, not an aroma. But very quickly, we got rid of the black cups, put the beige cups back on the shelves, met with Angelo, went on his show to apologize and thank him, for what he did to help us correct the problem. I appeared on a show just a week ago, and we had a great time, and he's a Wawa fan, and in his mind, he saved the company. And he wanted a big check, and I said, Angelo, you're priceless. There's no way I could give you a big check.
Did he like seeing the story in the book?
Oh, he loved it. He approved it, and he loved the story in the book. And, we're a local company. People have fun with us. We make news. We're part of their lives. This was a learning opportunity. Hopefully it never happens again. But you face those issues, and you face them with humility.
Well, I remember the first or second time that I was in your office with you, and probably with Lori, maybe Thayer, and you started telling me this cup story. And I thought maybe this was a bit of a test to see, how I would respond to something negative about the company, and you're telling the story in great earnest, and I think you showed me a cup, and I was just like, I couldn't help. It's just like I just did now. I couldn't help but laugh. I just thought, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. A coffee cup that smells like BO. How could that be?
Well, and coffee's our number one seller and profit maker, and I still have a black coffee cup in my office today to remind me of those days.
That's a crazy, crazy story.
But the book is filled with wonderful anecdotes of that nature and stories of that nature. A lot of books are testimonials to company success. I wanted this book, and we worked so closely together on it, to be true to our authenticity, true to who we were. And we do celebrate mistakes. We talk about mistakes. We don't take ourselves too seriously. Humility is very important in terms of our culture. And that's why I thought it was important that we share the lessons learned from co-branding, the lessons learned from the coffee cup. There was another one that I was involved in, Wawa Boli. We sold Stromboli. There was a guy down in Delaware who was making these wonderful Strombolis in his garage. And they found their way into our stores, and we baked them off, and they were delicious. But he couldn't keep up with the production, so he sold the rights to our commissary. They set up this very elaborate and costly production line, and we made bullies like mad. The only problem was we couldn't sell them because they couldn't have the taste of that original bully. So somewhere there's a warehouse filled with bullies. I'm convinced of that today. But again, Boli's failure led to a lot of other successes with other food products that we still have in our business today.
Well, let's take a couple minutes left. Let's talk about a few other things, a little other aspects of the company. Southwest Airlines had a very important part in development of the internal side of Wawa, the side that most people don't see. Tell folks a little about where Wawa modeled a bit on Southwest.
Well, I'm a Southwest holic. You know, people say they're a Wawa holic. I'm a Southwest holic. Not that I don't like the other airlines. I do fly them. But there's something about Southwest culture, and it's based on servant leadership. And they have a lot of cultural characteristics very similar to ours. Always wanted to benchmark and visit Southwest. And they're busy people, so they, you know, don't have time to benchmark a lot of companies. And we went through the normal protocol to benchmark. So finally one day I said to Barbara Ennis, who works for me, let's send them a milk crate filled with peanuts, Wawa nuts, because I love their nuts, but we have good nuts too. And let's fill it with toys, Wawa toys and things of that nature, and send it down to Colleen Barrett, their president. And, you know, suggest that we're as crazy and nuts as they are, and we like to benchmark with them. Well, this milk crate filled with nuts and Wally the Goose ends up on her desk. She doesn't know quite what to do with it. She doesn't normally receive packages of this name. So she called her PR person in, and the PR person said, oh, my sister lives in Virginia. They have Wawas in Virginia. Let me find out from my sister more about Wawa. And her sister raved about Wawa. So, you know, she got back. The PR person did the Colleen. And that opened the door for us to go down and benchmark with Southwest. And we had a wonderful discussion. But out of that discussion, they had some programs that we adopted here, one called Internal Care. And they have a program which is partly sponsored by Southwest, but the associates contribute to help associates in need. You know, if associates have financial problems and they need some financial support, if they need emotional support, the Associate in Need program is there to help them out. So we now have a Wawa Associate in Need program that has really helped a lot of our people when there have been hurricanes that have hit, their homes have been flooded, they have illnesses. A spouse loses a job and they need additional money for a short period of time. And that reflects very well in the culture. So we have a lot in common with Southwest. And again, it is a servant-led company, very similar to Wawa. I guess the biggest difference between the two is that they're publicly traded and we're, you know, a privately held company. And as I love to talk about, you know, what really makes Wawa so unique is the fact that we are privately held. We share ownership with our associates, and we have servant leadership. Those three things make Wawa, Wawa. And if you strip away any one of those things, we'd be a very different culture. And, you know, you strip away any one of those three things, it would change what we do each and every day. So that's one of the things I really, as you know, Bob, wanted to preserve and write about in the book, why we're privately held, why we share ownership, and why we believe in servant leadership. That is Wawa. That is our DNA. That is our inner core. You know, public companies are fine, but public companies tend to be a little bit more short-sighted and have investors that don't have the emotional connection to the brand. In our case, we have family ownership with a strong emotional connection. We have associates who own 37, 38% of this company with a strong emotional connection. That makes all the difference in the world.
Well, one more thing I want to touch on before we let you go, and you know, and I know we could talk about this stuff for hours because we have. So,
many hours, Bob, by phone and in person.
Many hours. Last thing I want to touch on is that the company, and you in particular, I think, used the 50th anniversary as the beginning of something called the Wawa Foundation. And I mentioned at the top of the show that all of Wawa's profits from the Wawa Way will go to the foundation. What kind of things will the foundation do, and you know, how would you explain it to folks?
Well, our associates in Wawa has always given back to the community, both in terms of financial support and in terms of participation. And our people go out and do walkathons, participate in the Susan Komen Race for the Cure on Mother's Day, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So they're very generous of their time. But we also, you know, donate a percentage of our profits to community causes. So we created this foundation to formalize what we're doing. And the Wawa Foundation benefits causes that support overcoming hunger, dealing with health issues, and celebrating and helping everyday heroes. So the proceeds of this book will go to the Wawa Foundation. Again, it's all part of servant leadership. It's all part of giving back to the community. If it wasn't for the communities we serve, we wouldn't be here today. We're friends and neighbors serving friends and neighbors.
Where have I heard that before? Folks, listen, you can find Howard Stokoe's new book. It's the Cultural History of Wawa. It's called The Wawa Way, How a Funny Name and Six Core Values Revolutionized Convenience in the more than 625 Wawa stores up and down the East Coast or anywhere books are sold. Or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching the video on MrMedia.com, just below the video, somewhere over there, maybe over there, you'll see a copy of the book. You can click on it right now, order it. You can get it three ways. You can get it as an ebook sent directly to your Kindle. You can get it as an audiobook. This was one I didn't know about. It's an audiobook. Or you can order the physical book, and I'm sure Amazon, via their drone system, can get it to you in about 30 minutes, maybe a day. So do that. The website for Wawa, of course, is wawa.com. Wawa is on Twitter. Wawa is on Facebook. Come and like Wawa on Facebook. And Howard, you know, it was great to see you again. Unfortunately, I was sick last week, and I missed the big celebration after all this time. Killed me. But I'm so glad we had a few minutes to visit and talk, and I wish you very well. And thank you very much for joining us in Mr. Media today.
Well, Bob, last week's celebration was fantastic, and we had almost 2,000 people at the Constitution Center to celebrate. The news media covered many of the events, and I want to thank you for being my co-author. You know, I've learned a great deal, and I admire the work that you did going way back with Home Depot and Built to Scratch, more recently with Vernon Hill and his book, Raving Fans. And it was an exciting journey, and it got us to a very good destination point. And I really believe the best is yet to come with Wawa. You know, we're 50 years old in the retail business, over two centuries in business overall, you know, in this marketplace. And I've always said you've got to keep the organization young and kid-like. And I do think the future for the people here is very, very bright. But thank you. It's been a great partnership, and look forward to continuing to work with you as we continue to talk about the Wawa Way.
That would be great. Howard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
And what you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. Just a Minute with Joe Ardinger.
Like most people living in California, I am deluding myself that I have the flu. But we all know it's really radiation from Fukushima. Or just the flu.
To hear the rest of this minute, to sample Joe's other minutes, and to subscribe to his newest ones, visit RealmNetwork.com. That's RELMNetwork.com. Just a Minute with Joe Ardinger, another great Realm Network production. Wednesday afternoons, right here on the Realm Network.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by the Realm Network.